As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Until Saturday. I am not Ari Wasserman. I am your host for today, Sam Khan, filling in for Ari while he takes some well-deserved R&R. Joined today by two of my favorite people at The Athletic, our resident weird food take guy.
No.
Deion Sanders expert, David Uppin.
Yes.
And our esteemed college football recruiting editor, and at this time of year, your favorite college baseball expert, Mitch Light. Mitch, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Sam. I hope you guys are doing well. And Ub and I only hear about your food exploits from Ari. So I don't want to beat a dead horse, but let's just say I tend to side with Ari on many of those takes. But you know,
just for the record, so much of the crepe debate began because I was touting the praises of the Magic Pan crepe stand at the Denver airport, of which I first discovered, like, I think it was on my way to Alaska to profile a assistant coach that is no longer working in college football, but I was able to make a return there, and it's perhaps even better than I remembered. So shout out to the Magic Pan crepe stand. Not a sponsor, but if you'd like to be, give us a shout.
You're already giving free advertising. I will say, Dave, I do support you on the French toast casserole thing. That sounded pretty amazing. I may have to have you send that recipe to me so I can try it in my home. But guys, be sure to follow the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Please support the show by dropping a 5-star review. If you leave a question with your 5-star review, we'll do our best to answer it on the show. Leave us a voicemail if you want to take part in the podcast. The Until Saturday phone line is open at 316-462-9852. We always love to hear your voices, and the participation really adds to our show and also is makes it a candidate for future mailbag episodes. So we appreciate that. Today, we are going to talk about the Big 12 from a football standpoint. Obviously, things have changed with realignment. Texas and Oklahoma are gone. The SEC and the Big 10 obviously have stacked the deck in terms of their finances. But also, I think when you talk about national title contenders, the SEC and the Big 10 seem to have most of them in their conferences. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the future of the conference and ask the question, who would be the first team in this 16-team edition of the Big 12 to win a national championship? And furthermore, is it possible to do that? So we're going to go through this. We're going to tier the teams. We're going to break them down in different tiers. We're going to basically three tiers. We're going to have a top tier, a middle tier, and a bottom tier. And I will say it's kind of hard to separate this conference from 1 to 16, because I feel like there's
nearly
not a huge
impossible
gap.
Nearly impossible, I will say.
It's really difficult, but we're going to do our best. So we're going to have this discussion and get everybody's thoughts on it. This is the lone remaining power conference without a national championship in the college football era. The SEC has 6, the Big 10 has 2, the ACC has 2. But we want to know college football is about hope. It's about dreams. And we want to know which of these teams should have hope that they can play for a national championship like TCU did a couple years ago, or possibly win one in the 12-team era. So we put our heads together to make a list along this line. And I'll start, David, with you. Just off the top, What do you think the chances are that a Big 12 team can win a national championship in the 12-team college football playoff era?
I'm going to say less than 5%. It's not going to happen. I hate to play the role of Ari here in crushing people's dreams, but I think two things stand out to me. One, you look in the past, you know, we were preparing for the show. I can't believe that Colorado in 1990 is the last team out of this group to win a national title. Now, since then, I would say three and a half teams stand out to me. 2011, Oklahoma State is probably the top of that line as probably the best team. I think you look at 2014, that Baylor TCU team, take your pick. Pick one of those two teams. I think they were both very equal. I think that they both, if they had given a shot, been given a shot, could have competed. And then I guess you have to throw 2022 TCU in there, but I think, you know, I think if you even truth serum Sonny Dykes, I think he'd be like, ah, you know, we caught some breaks. Was that one of the, you know, I mean, I wrote this column when they got selected. Were they one of the four overall best teams in college football? I don't necessarily think that that's the case. That's fine. Like, they won their games. They deserve to get to all the stages that they got to. But if you played out that season, you know, 1,000 times, I'm not sure it plays out that favorably for TCU. So I put that team on kind of a lower rung than those other Baylor TCU teams in 14, Oklahoma State in 2011. So all that said, you look into the future and you're going to have to fight your way through a 12-team playoff, and all of the haves and have-nots, like, the Big 12 is on the wrong side of that fence, talent and finances. And how are you going to recruit moving forward? What is the pitch to a kid that has offers in the SEC, in the Big 10, to say, no, you should come here instead? I don't know. You might be able to get one, a couple one-offs, but I don't know how, especially considering the historical success of the teams in the Big 12, as fun as this conference is going to be and as quality as it's going to be and as well-coached as it's going to be, I don't think it's possible to consistently recruit at a top 15 level, which is like baseline for even like competing. Can you string together four top 15 classes? I'm not even certain you could do two top 15 classes in the new Big 12, let's say 5 years from now. So I am not bullish on the league's chances to actually win a title, but I guess stranger things have happened, and we don't really know what the 12-team playoff is going to look like. Is there a room for a sort of Cinderella glass cleat? I'm not sure. I would think not, just based on this is a more violent sport. This is a sport where there is a lot less variance at the top, but we also did watch Michigan TCU, and things happen. So I hate to start the show off on a downer note.
You're listening to until Saturday. No.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's like where I'm coming from. I think that there are some teams that will, you know, might make a deep run, but I think getting to that finish line, scaling that mountaintop, man, it's hard for me to see it.
Well, there's a lot there. And I think the first thing that comes to mind when you said to your last couple points there, David, is it's TCU, I think we all agree, not taking anything away from that great season they had, magical run. They got by one really good team in Michigan, not a great, you know, and then they faced the Georgia. The teams that get to the playoff now are going to have to string together multiple really strong performances against good to elite teams. So we can break this up. Which teams are going to like maybe make the semifinals versus winning the championship? Those are two different things. You bring up the recruiting element, which we're going to get to. I'll tease a story that we're going to publish next month. We did one last year where our staff ranked the recruiting kind of potential for all Power 5 teams or Power 4 teams. We're going to get into some numbers that are very revealing about at least what we think the recruiting potential there is. But I don't want to contradict anything we're going to do from a tier standpoint, guys. But do you agree with me? Like, I've got the list of Big 12 schools here. There's not a school there. If you said one of these schools is going to win three Big 12 titles over a 5-year stretch, there's not one school on of the 16 that I would say not going to happen. Like, I could make an argument for all 16 of them.
That's going to be the most fun thing about this.
You can't do this in the other leagues. Sorry.
This is the biggest. No, this is good. That's the biggest asset for the Big 12 moving forward is upward mobility and parity. No other league in college football is going to have more of this.
Like Kentucky, at its peak, which maybe it's right now. We all agree Mark Stoops is a great coach. They're probably recruiting as well as they were going to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Could they have a magical SEC championship year? Like, probably not. I think we all agree, no. Could they do 3 in a 5-year period? Never. Same thing with all these other leagues. Mm-hmm. That's what makes the Big 12 so great, but it's going to make this argument basically get everyone mad because we're going to have some teams in tier 3 or whatever that don't belong there.
Well, they might be. You could maybe make a case for these teams in tier 3 and tier 1 in like 3 years. I think that's definitely possible. There's going to be a lot of fuel in the preseason poll in this league every single year because, you know, with the portal and the changing roster management and roster construction in college football, I think the sport in August has never been more unpredictable. And I think that that's going to play out, especially in the Big 12. It's going to be really, really fun to watch. This will be, I think, the most unpredictable league. It has a chance to be one of the most fun leagues. The Big 12 is going to be a really, really good product on the field and a very fun product, and the title race and getting one of those AQ spots, that race is going to be really compelling every single year. Because like you said, there won't be 16 teams that can contend every year, but there might be like 10.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty reasonable, I think, to start the year. And that's going to be the case in more years than not. And that is not the case, you know. You look at the Big Ten last year, what, 14 teams? You had 2 real contenders, and then, like, if you wanted to get real spicy, you could entertain Penn State, which was, like, you know, certainly seemed a folly in retrospect, but, like, in theory they could do it. But it was either going to be Ohio State or Michigan. You look at the SEC, it's like, okay, it's going to be Alabama or Georgia. Maybe A&M gets up there, maybe. Who am I forgetting? I guess maybe Tennessee could have flirted with it if Joe Milton had made the leap that people thought he might make. Am I forgetting somebody in the SEC? But like, there wasn't a lot of that. And in the Big 12, I mean, I think if we named our top 3 title contenders for 2024, we weren't doing it on the show. We might have 9 different teams or at least like 7 or 8. And that's a compelling thing.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's get into the tiers. And before we do, some historical data to consider. Like Dave pointed out, the last team in this 16-team Big 12 to have won a national championship was Colorado in 1990.
Shout out to Eric Bieniemy.
That's right. We had some flirtations with it. Playoff appearances by TCU in 2022, Cincinnati in 2021, Baylor and TCU in 2014 just missed the playoff, as you guys mentioned. Oklahoma State just missed it in 2021. Of course, in the pre-playoff era, David mentioned the 2011 Oklahoma State team, which of course lost that Thursday night game to Iowa State. That was that kind of crushed their hopes, but that was a really good team. But
how are we feeling about TCU 2009?
That was really good. TCU 2010, I think they ended up finishing number 2 in the final AP rankings, which
Tank Carter we'll get into. Has many, many wristbands. I would have liked to have seen that team get a shot. But
beat Wisconsin anyway. In the Rose Bowl. That was in the pre-BCS era, and that team would have made a 14 playoff. So that's that's also to consider in this, is that some of these teams have been shut out by what in the pre-playoff era of what would have been a playoff berth. But let's get into the tiers. We'll start with our top tier, and like give you guys a primer of how we're doing this. We kind of try to group these based on this top tier is programs that have had tangible success, especially of late, who feel like maybe you have some windows open and have demonstrated sustainable success, repeated success over time. And I'm going to start with a team that I think is the biggest threat coming into this league. It's Utah. Mm-hmm. Kyle Whittingham, the head coach there, 162-79, entering his 21st season. They've got 16 bowl berths in 20 years post Urban Meyer, 2 conference titles in the last 3 years. Of the current Big 12 teams, the 16 team, they have the second highest winning percentage historically. In the last 10 years, second highest winning percentage in the last 10 years, and the highest winning percentage all time as a program amongst all the tied with Arizona State. So this is a program that has been really solid. They are able to develop talent, even though they don't recruit at a top 25 level consistently. Mitch, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Utah and their chances in this new conference?
Yeah. So what I said earlier, like you could, which of these programs could we see winning 3 and 5 year period? Like gun to my head, if you told me to pick one, it would be Utah. I think they're coming, you know, last year wasn't, it's injuries, obviously some struggles with the quarterback position, wasn't a vintage Utah year, but they are consistently strong. They play a different style than a lot of teams in this league. This different style has given, I don't want to maybe use the word finesse, but you know, some teams like USC that play like a lot of big teams. Yeah. Beat them up. there. So yeah, I think you're right on there. The key is just, we hope for Utah's sake, this was just a 1 year blip with Cam Rising coming back, that they're back where they were. You know, we still haven't seen, to me, this might not be fair, but like an old school coach like Kyle Whittingham adapting to the new landscape in college football. We haven't really seen, you know, they've gotten some transfers in. I guess I'm filibustering here. I'm just, that would be my concern, how they transition to the new, to adapt to the new roster building. But I'm with you. They would be number one on my list.
Yeah, I think, I don't want to spoil the next pick on the list. I won't say, or the next one in the tier. So I won't spoil that. But I think that they both have something in common, which is that they're just a headache to play every single time. Like, you see Utah on the schedule, you're just like, like every single time. And I think that's the same thing for the team we have second in this tier. I think there's something to be said for that. And I think that that is a cultural thing. I think that's a coaching thing. And that's how you get that consistency that, hey, yeah, Cam Rising's knee is a mess. We don't really know what his situation is. And guess what? Last year was a quote-unquote down year for Utah, and they were still pretty tough. They were still a really good team. And I think my brain can't really comprehend like Utah Utah in the Big 12 is just it's kind of an odd thing to me. Like, it's not as like hilariously weird as, you know, Cal and Stanford going to the ACC. You know, they're coming in with this package deal with all these sort of mountain schools, and it's just a weird, I still remember, you know, WAC Utah. And so like them, and I think of them as like a West Coast team. They're not really a West Coast, you know, they're not really, Utah's not on the West Coast. Last I checked, I don't think the Salt Lake City has any connection, or Salt Lake has any connection to the Pacific Ocean. So, you know, we'll see. But I think that element of toughness and what you see from Morgan Scalley and from Kyle Whittingham's teams every single year, not to mention, they've had a crazy run of tight ends as well. Brent Keithy, you know, there's another guy whose knee did not cooperate with them having a huge year last year. But, you know, I am all on board with this team at number one. I don't think the transition is going to be that hard for them. I think as you see these, like, lateral moves, as these conference coalesce a little bit, you know, we'll see what, like, Washington and Oregon have to deal with going into the Big Ten. Feels like that's a little bit of a step up, but I think Utah's going to be fine. You know, they've already gone through this. Like, TCU already went through their growing pains. Utah went through their growing pains moving up. And I think this is going to be a situation where if Utah walks in and they're top three in the Big 12 for the next 5 years, I don't think anybody's going to be like, well, how did that happen?
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah, shout out to Whittingham, who like has a case as a top 3 to 5 coach in college football that like your casual fan doesn't really recognize. Mm-hmm. But Kyle Whittingham, I mean, Utah through and through.
Yeah, solid recruiting program too. This is average rank of 36.8 the last 10 years. That would be number 2 in the new Big 12. So this is a program that recruits consistently well. And I think moving to the Big 12 is going to be an advantage because they do recruit the state of Texas. You mentioned Morgan Scalley, David. He spends a ton of time in this state, and they were able to unearth gems that they're able to develop really well. Speaking of programs that develop really well, Kansas State, the team, Dave, you were alluding to, that is our in tier one, that is our next group. We got 4 teams in this tier, and I'll go ahead and list them all for you. Utah, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and TCU are tier one teams to look at contenders in the Big 12 long-term moving forward. But Kansas State, of course, Chris Klieman, great pedigree at the FCS level, won national championships at North Dakota State. They've do not recruit at a super high level, but they never recruited at a super high level, even in the Bill Snyder era. They're, of course, famously heavy on junior college guys and lower-end rated recruits, and were able to develop them into a winning program. This is a program that consistently wins, that won the Big 12 in recent years. Dave, you mentioned K-State. This is a team that is going to make it painful to play you. Do you think if Klieman is here long-term that this is a program that has a chance to make some noise and make some playoff runs?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's possible, I think. But I think you're already seeing it illustrated, the point that I made at the start, right? Colin Klein, one of the fastest rising coaches in college football right now. And I don't think you, I mean, if you're ranking K-State legends, is he like top two? Maybe you could maybe make, I mean, Sproles is probably number one, but like Colin Klein's probably number two.
Al Roberson?
No, I'd go Klein over Roberson and certainly Klein over Bishop.
Well, Bishop's like, the one that kind of put him on the map too, nationally.
That's true.
Yeah, but I'm not going to talk about the ending for Bishop there.
Okay.
Like, it's like, you know, it is what it is. But I think, like, ultimately...
Sorry, go ahead, David.
No, but either way, he's a legend.
Yeah.
And they couldn't keep him.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a problem. And I think long-term in college football, the portal era of, like, constant transferring up, I think that will not be the case in perpetuity if we get to the employment era. So I think the idea that you can't retain actual football talent, I think that will go away sort of in some sense. It won't be like it is now where like if let's say you're 2030, Avery Johnson has like a 35 touchdown, 1,500 yard rushing season. He's not just going to go to like Ohio State the next year or Alabama or whatever. You know, I don't think that's going to be the case in college football forever. It is going to be for a while, but if you can get employment, that can sort that out. But that all that is to say that you're going to have issues retaining coaching talent. And that is a huge red flag for me in terms of just like the Big 12 sustainability, in terms of becoming a conference that can compete for national titles, because I'm a big believer in continuity. And, you know, the term stepping stone, it kind of feels like that's where this is kind of headed. But all that to say, K-State is salty all the time. Chris Klieman, you know, has had a ton of success, since coming up from the FCS. We've documented on this show, more schools should hire lower division coaches. I'm worried about this. Yeah, this transition will be interesting. Yeah. You know, as I understand it, Matt Wells is going to be handling a little bit more of the passing game. Connor Riley be handling a little bit more of the running game over at K-State. But, I'm really intrigued to kind of see what this program can do and how much success Chris Klieman can sustain, because I think you can win 10 games more often than you don't at K-State. I think that's possible in the current alignment of the Big 12.
Yeah, I'll play the role of Ari that you played earlier. While Kansas State is remarkably consistent, love everything about the program, I think their lack of recruiting success puts a ceiling on, mm-hmm. and I don't think that ceiling is winning a national championship. Like I would pick I'm picking this one out of a hat. I would pick like an Arizona State that it's much more volatile, as more likely to win because they could have two or three great recruiting years if Kenny Dillingham gets it going. Their recruiting ceiling is much higher, and they could have the right quarterback, the right portal hits, and have a great year. Like I would buy stock in Kansas State over the next 10 years, but if I had to pick a team to win the national championship, they would not be it.
I think the question that you're asking, well, we should frame it this way, Mitch, is if Kirby Smart went to K-State, could he win a national championship? I'm not sure that he could. If he went to Arizona State, could he win a national championship? Maybe. Like, I could see that.
That's our next story. Ranking national championship contenders 1 through 70 if Kirby Smart were the head coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Kansas State, 57.6 average recruiting rank the last 10 years. That's 11th in the 16-team Big 12. But they do more with less, and it will be interesting to see how they go along. Let's go to another team.
I know we're going long here already. Real quick point in Kansas State, and guys, tell me if this is dumb. But like, I think a lot of programs nationally are affected by what their rivals are doing in state, like South Carolina, Clemson. Not that they both can't be good, but there's not enough. There's basically no blue chippers in state where Kansas's rise to me has no effect on Kansas State. It's not like they're snapping up all the recruits that Kansas State or vice versa. So I think that's one positive for both those programs that they can both be at their peak at the same time because they're not leaning in on in-state recruits. You guys buy that?
That's fair.
The weird thing is, like, the portal has kind of replaced JUCO. Like, you don't hear JUCO recruiting, like, hardly at all.
Sam, you and Grace worked on that story last year.
Yeah, big-time guys don't really go.
Big down to the Power 5 level, yes.
Yeah, big-time guys, like, if they get dismissed or they transfer, they don't go to the JUCO levels. That's not, you're not going to find, like, a Cam Newton at Blinn anymore. But that hasn't, K-State made their bones recruiting JUCOs for a long time, and that hasn't seemed to really affect the program. Like, Kansas, Mississippi, California,
Texas like to some extent.
Texas a little bit, or is like where the JUCOs are. Am I forgetting a state? I don't think so.
Iowa.
Oh, yeah, excuse me.
Arizona.
The Reavers. Iowa.
Iowa Western.
Iowa Western, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting to me. But
I will say this on K-State. I am bullish on them with Klieman, just as long as Klieman is there. Because like you guys have mentioned, hiring coaches who have won even at lower levels, I am a very big believer in winners win. And winners know how to win. And there is a certain art to building a program and building a winning program, even if it's at the D3 level or the D2 level or the FCS level. And I think that has shown so far. They won the Big 12 in 2022. They have been a contender in this conference pretty consistently. They haven't really had the bottom fall out at any point so far in the Klieman era. So I think the floor is very high with Klieman. The question, I think, is how high the ceiling is. But as long as he is there, I do like Kansas State's chances.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Let's move on to another program with another really solid coach that's been there for a long time, Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State. This is probably the most consistent of the legacy Big 12 programs out there. 8 seasons of 10 or more wins since 2010. He's 166-79 there, entering his 20th season. They recruit at a top 40 level nationally, and I this was a number that stood out to me. Oklahoma State, of the 16 teams in the new Big 12, has spent more weeks in the AP top 25 than any other Big 12 program since 2000.
If we're going to go with the banging on the door, most likely to kick it down, that's the kind of stat you look for. The team that's most, they're among the, that are ranked the most.
Yeah. I think the biggest question for me is with Oklahoma State is they've been here. They've been at a really good level, a conference championship caliber level. They've played for multiple Big 12 championships. They've been in that conversation. They've played in New Year's Six Bowls. The question is can they break through to a higher level under Gundy? Gundy has been there and done great for 19 seasons, going on his 20th. But can they break through to the next level to become a real contender? And maybe they are a team. Maybe they're one of these teams that in the 12-team playoff era benefits because they have missed them a couple of times closely. Yeah. Maybe they're one of these teams that gets in the playoff, and who knows what happens if they get in and get a win or two and get on a run here. This is an interesting program to me, especially with Gundy there, considering that I feel like sometimes they do go up and down. But overall, when you look at the long-term body of work, one of the most consistent programs out there. I'm curious what you guys think.
Yeah, well, interesting. When's the last time Oklahoma State had a losing season, Sam? Do you know the answer to that question?
2006?
2005.
2005. I was close.
That's impressive.
That is wild. Now,
that's pretty good.
You're right, and that consistency is insane. Like, especially at a place at Oklahoma State that has not historically been the easiest place to win. There's been a lot of chatter about Mike Gundy's reluctance to embrace the new world of college football and just, like, the relationship piece and what roster construction looks like and roster management and all these things. I mean, Max had a story before last season that I think raised everybody's antennae of like, uh-oh.
Like, alarming.
This may not go great. And then what does he do? He wins 10 games and finishes in the top 20.
Plays the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, with a roster that a lot of people thought was like depleted. And
after they lost to South Alabama and lost to Iowa State early in the year.
And they didn't just lose to South Alabama, man. Sam, they got rocked. So this team is hard to figure. You know, that 2021 team, you know, they would have gotten in the playoff.
If they beat Baylor, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that was a team with like a super high ceiling. I mean, that 11 team was a wagon. You know, they were the Terminator 2 improved sequel to the original Terminator 2010 team. But it's like you said, they've had a bunch of like okay teams, but I you know, they're, if we're talking national championships, you know, it's of all of those teams since 2006, you know, they've really only had one that I think like had a decent shot. And that is alarming to me because the winds of change are blowing against you now. You're in a headwind. It was already kind of tough. Now it's only getting tougher. But you know, Mike Gundy seems to operate best when his back is against the wall. We saw that this year. We've seen that. You know, Mike's had his fair share of rough moments, but he is sort of the king of the castle there. And how do you do that? You keep winning. And so this is a team that, like, I think we've seen enough from Oklahoma State that, like, whatever the conversation is about Oklahoma State, if at the end of the season they're holding up the Big 12 championship trophy, you probably should not be, like, floored. And that is a really powerful thing that I think we've seen time and time again with Oklahoma State.
Yeah, you look at their recruiting ranking, average recruiting ranking, 40.6 the last 10 years. But I will note this, the last two classes, their 2023 class and their 2024 class, both outside the top 50. Mitch, is that, following your recruiting nationally, is that a reason for concern in your mind with Oklahoma?
Yeah, State? Well, I'd want to look it up too. And this pains me to say, as someone who follows recruiting closely and relies on data so much, that the overall rankings are less important, especially when you get outside the 20, because they're so influenced by numbers. So, you know, I'd have to look to see how many guys they signed, and I could look it up easily. So, like, you could have a class ranked 57 that's really better than a class that someone signed in the 40s. Just because your number, you only signed 10, 12 guys versus 25 guys. Mm-hmm. You know, you obviously you want more good players, but you really got to look at the average recruiting, you know, average rating per player there. So, I'll look that up. But it's everyone has their own different opinion of a program. My opinion of Oklahoma State is every time I'm ready to I'm checking out on Gundy. It's like you guys said, is when they're holding up.
This was the year,
sign.
Like you could see it coming. You were like, oh man, this is. And then the South Alabama game happens, and you're like, where's the floor for Oklahoma State? You're like, oh my gosh. And then win 10 games and finish the top 20. Why not? Sure. How about it?
Yeah, I looked it up real quick. They're 24 class had 18 commits, so a little bit on the
smaller
side.
It's not that low. It's small. Yeah. It's not like...
Especially in the portal era.
Yeah.
Yeah, and an average recruit ranking to look like about 86.6 per 247, and then their 86.8, I'm sorry, and then their 2023 class was 22. So it was, okay. That's about the right, and it was a little bit lower average ranking, 85.
So we can sign this, ring the alarm bells a little bit, I would say.
No 4 stars in there. But again, Gundy is a guy who has typically found guys and developed guys. But that the question is how much can you do that in the era of player movement? But he does keep winning. I think it's going to be fascinating to see. I think they're one of these teams like Utah, like we mentioned, like Kansas State, that is going to be consistently playing for or winning the Big 12 in the near future, at least. So that'll be interesting to see. Let's move on to our last team in Tier 1. And this is probably the most fascinating of this group for me, TCU. They played for a college football playoff national championship in 2022. We know what happened against Georgia. They did. you may have forgotten that they were in that game, considering how that game went. But Sonny Dykes did a really good job in that first year. Last year, the bottom fell out a little bit. They went 5-7. The thing that's interesting to me about TCU is that historically, and particularly in the first half of the Gary Patterson era, first maybe 14 years of the Gary Patterson era, really consistent, really good. Of course, some of that was spent in Conference USA, the WAC, or Mountain West.
But
even getting into the Big 12, they succeeded pretty quickly. They were finished right outside the playoff in 2014, famously. They played for a Big 12 championship in 2017. Then it seems like it's kind of fallen out a little bit. They've had single-digit wins, I think, 5 of the last 6 years. And this college football playoff run was sandwiched between 2 5-7 seasons. Mitch, from looking a bird's eye view of TCU, what is your thought on ceiling versus floor for this program?
Well, I think because they crashed the playoff party when all this happened, we were all thinking, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for you guys, but from a recruiting standpoint, we thought it was like the perfect timing to emerge as the team, the program to beat on the recruiting trail in this new league. They're located in, obviously, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, very, very fertile. And in our recruiting expectations, our recruiting potential story that's coming next week, next month, we have TCU as the highest rated program in the Big 12 at number 28 nationally. So I'm trying to look. There was a, you know, I'm looking at the range. We had Sam, you had them 21 as the highest, and the lowest was Kenny at 42. A big range there. So I'm backing off that a little bit because they did not have you did not follow up their national championship appearance with a great class. I still think Sonny Dykes is a very good coach. We have them in our tier one. So if I was a 8 out of 10 confident in them being the program to beat going forward, I'm maybe now a 6.5 out of 10. I still think they have too many positives. They have the right coach in place, the location. Good, not an elite fan base. I mean, when they're good, I mean, you guys, that's your part of the country more. I know, David, you covered them. When they're good, that's a really good environment. But like a lot of these schools, when they're not, it's just okay. It's not like a built like South Carolina where there's, you know, 90,000 people if they're 3-9. So I think they check too many boxes to jump off the bandwagon.
Yeah, I will ask this, but let me push back on that real quick, Mitch.
Okay.
You said they have the right coach. David, I'm curious. What are your thoughts on Sonny Dykes? I have generally been positive about him. But I think this is a really important year for him.
You're talking about the 2022 National Coach of the Year, Sam.
Yes. Yes, tread lightly. Yes, I am. I love Sonny. Sonny and I get along great.
I don't know what you're hearing. I hear a guy that doesn't like Sonny Dykes.
I'm just playing devil's advocate and asking the question.
Please do.
I think this is if they go 7-5 this year, not to say that they will, but if they don't have a really good season this year, do you think people are... Because remember, this is a TCU program that had Gary Patterson, who was really highly successful for a long period of time. So I do think the dynamic at TCU is interesting because of who he followed, even though Patterson fell off those last 4 years. And it was pretty obvious. And there was no question that they needed to move on at that point. Mm-hmm. That said, I do feel like sometimes he's getting measured up against his predecessor and what his predecessor used to be.
Yeah.
And I do think after the 5-7 last year and how everything went, I do think this is a really important year for him. So I'm curious, Dave, where do you stand on Sonny Dykes?
Yeah, I mean, he's had an odd career a little bit. Like, his teams at Louisiana Tech were pretty fun. Like, I'm sure, Sam, you remember that that game.
2011
Johnny
team,
Football. Yeah. That was, like, fire. Yeah. That was awesome. Yep. And, you know, the institutional support at Cal was terrible. I'm not going to throw that out, but, like, I think even Sonny might say, like, maybe should have waited for a different job. Like, the institutional support was not there. SMU, you get that institutional support despite playing in a, like, worse league. But I think, like, at the end of the day, coaches, much like teams, like you are what your record says you are. And I think if you take a team in year one and you get them to the national championship game, like that's pretty wild. Like that's insane. And that team, that was like a team that seemed to have like nine lives. And I mean, the fire drill field goal at Baylor,
that was crazy.
The defensive stop, like it just, this team was, that was a pretty special TCU team.
I'm going to interrupt this podcast because yes. I just realized that Louisiana Tech's last three coaches are named Sonny, Skip, and Sonny.
Sonny Cumby, Skip Holt, Sonny Cumby. Sonny Cumby,
carry on.
Love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
So
we're due for a skip next, I guess, after Sonny Cumby.
TCU, yeah, TCU lacks a lot of the consistency that we've seen. Like, I'm looking at it, you know, you mentioned 2 5-7 seasons, another 5-7 season in 2019. 6-7 in 2016, 4-8 their first year in the Big 12, no, second year in the Big 12, 7-6 year one. That transition was a little tough. I mean, they're not, but I think ultimately for the reasons that you highlighted, you know, recruiting and location, and they have money and they have institutional support. You don't have the biggest fan base in the world. Some of that is just like
private
size
school.
Of your school.
Yeah.
And like, I think, I don't know if this is still true, but at one point I know it was true that Texas had more active students than TCU had living alumni. I don't know if that's still true because TCU has gotten bigger, but like, you know, they're still a smaller school. It is what it is. Like your student section, you know, can only be as big as your student body, right? So that is what it is, but the Froghorn will still be there. But I think this team has the highest ceiling because... Agreed. I'm not going to say that SMU being in DFW doesn't count, but I still think that TCU is by far the most attractive team sitting in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, which is a really powerful thing, especially in the portal era. And we've seen this a little bit with them. They haven't had a ton of luck getting big-time bounce-back guys from DFW just yet, but they've added guys that like have pretty good pedigrees. And I think over time, like that can click. You know, when you have guys coming back from Ohio State or Alabama or wherever that come back to TCU and say, hey, I want to be closer to home. It didn't work out there for whatever reason and can have really special careers there. And then, of course, you're in DFW. You can recruit. So I think this team, because they can recruit at the best level, even though they haven't had the consistency, I think this is the team with the highest ceiling in the Big 12. To me, it's not even close.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. They signed a class that was ranked number 21 in 2023. This is a team that has the highest recruiting average of the last 10 years of the 16-team Big 12, ranked 32nd. So given the location, given the donor support, I think they have a good administration from president, AD on down. And yeah. Even though I did question him just a few minutes ago, I do think Sonny Dykes does deserve a lot of credit. He did a really good job of rebuilding SMU, which, by the way, was not an easy thing to do because that program was kind of in shambles for such a long time post-death penalty. He got them back to 10-win seasons and being a contender, which set the table now for what they've done now, which is win a conference championship under Rhett Lashley. And I do think he's done a lot of cleaning up things that need to be done in the TCU program from an infrastructure standpoint, from just a taking care of player standpoint. And I do think the recruiting has been solid and I think will be good. And they have done a good job in the portal. It's one thing he did at SMU. He's doing really good at TCU is getting bounce back Texas recruits to come back home and play there. So I think they are the highest ceiling, but I am really curious. And I do think this next year or two is important for them, especially when you consider where this program has been the last 5-6 years.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Let's go to tier two, and we'll go a little bit quicker on these last two tiers, and I'll list off the teams, and let's talk about the ones that we'll start with. One that you probably wouldn't expect to be in tier two, but I'm going to put them in here because they are the most recent team to have won a national championship. It's Colorado, Baylor, Kansas, Arizona, BYU, and Cincinnati. That's our tier two. Let's start with Colorado. David, obviously this is a team that went 4-8. This is not a team we're talking about winning a national championship anytime soon. But Dion likes to talk about these expectations. He likes to pump up the buzz around his team. Obviously, they're going heavy portal, trying to get into impact guys. He has shown that he can get really high-end recruits, but they don't recruit high schools very heavily. And he had some interesting comments last week, David, about his approach to recruiting and particularly in-home visits, which he doesn't do. I'm curious to hear your version, how you receive that, Dave.
So it's not even just in-home visits. It's like getting out to high schools. You know, we've been talking about this for months. Like, we're trying to learn more about this program, and I found it interesting. Last summer, I went to Atlanta and did a profile of Travis Hunter before the season, so we had it ready for the season. And I was talking to the staff at Collins Hill in suburban Atlanta, and they were like, yeah, like, nobody from Jackson State's coaching staff like ever stepped foot on our campus. Like, Dion was recruiting Travis basically solely via FaceTime. And I put that in the story, but it's like, that's really weird. We've been talking about this for months, that like, we were pretty sure that this was the case. That's not that he just doesn't do in-homes. He doesn't go to high schools. Well, then the USA Today runs a story last week. I didn't even know you could FOIA off-campus contact. Shout out to Brent Strotenborn.
Neither did I.
I didn't know you could do that. I learned something. So anyway, that basically, not only has he not done that, but Deion Sanders, since taking the Colorado job, and I'm going to assume that this probably goes back to Jackson State as well, which is a different challenge, but still, zero off-campus recruiting contacts. That means you never went to a guy's house, you never went to a high school, all this stuff. Now, I'm not going to say a hit dog haulers, but Deion had a lot to say about this last week. I was in Boulder, where I'm going to write more about that trip and sort of the state of Colorado's program. But I went to the last stop on Deion's book tour Monday night in Boulder. And Deion was loose, man. He was like firing away. It was very entertaining. And like, he was around his people. He was getting, you know, some standing ovations. It was a little bit like a political rally at some points. But he said... I'll just quote you. Y'all got me like this. I haven't been like this in no other city. I can just be me. I don't have to watch my words and watch for misunderstanding unless some of these writers from Denver are out here. Coach Prime don't go on no visits. And people want to come see my house. They don't want me to see their house. I didn't want coaches coming to my house. We had rats and roaches. Coach Bowden came by and you'd see his head turn real quick. And I know what he saw. So that was at the book tour Monday night. Wednesday, he addressed this again, used a lot of the same material. Deion is very good with a microphone and a camera in his face. A lot of the same material, a lot of the same comments. But he said, my approach is totally different than other coaches, he said. First, asking if the reporter, Brent Schrotenbauer, who I've met a couple times, nice guy, good reporter, who published a report, was in the room. He was not in the room, just for the record. I don't think that's dodging. He does a lot of other things. And he also, I think, lives in San Diego. But he's a Colorado grad, just for the record. I'm a businessman as well, so I try to save our university money every darn chance I get. For me to go, let's say I go to Florida and I'm visiting IMG.
I'm sure
IMG.
That was it. Saving money for Colorado.
Yes. How much? $5 million for Deion? I'm just...
You're the expert. Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Are you making $5 million for... Okay, I'm just asking. Anyway... Let's say I go to Florida and I'm visiting IMG. You don't think those coaches are going to be a little upset if I don't come to the school down the street? You don't think it's going to be pandemonium? I'm going to get naysayed if I don't go another 45 minutes? Then if I go to that one, why didn't I come to that school? Now the coach is mad and he's going to let the kid come because I chose that school over that school. He said he did a self-survey. I forget exactly what he called it, but Then he said, I truly believe in my heart that parents don't want me in their house. And he said he'd rather show recruits and their parents the city of Boulder and why he loves it, all this stuff, and then repeated the Bobby Bowden rats and roaches stuff. Listen, like, we're going to talk more about this with Ari when he gets back from vacation on Thursday, so we won't go too far into this. But this is not sustainable. I'm sorry. It's not. Mm-hmm. I get you're in the transfer portal era, and I get you've had some big wins, okay? You've gotten Travis Hunter. You've gotten Cormani McClain. You've gotten Jordan Seaton. Those are really good. It's impressive to do that. But I think it comes down to this. If you are not going off campus and you are not getting into high schools, where it would be an event, you'd have crazy in-home visits. People are drawn to Deion. Deion is magnetic when he turns it on. The primetime persona is really compelling. So let's say you're not doing that. My simple question is this. Are you maximizing the potential of your program if you're not doing that? I get that you think, well, we can do it without it, or I have a different approach. Do you think that your program would not be better, that your recruiting results would not be better if you weren't on the road like a normal coach? If your answer to that is no, that's insane. I don't get that. And you can say all the reasons or suspect all the reasons why Deion's doing it, you know, budgetary, whatever. You know, you could just pay for your own travel. You're not doing this for money, as I've been told. All these other reasons, whatever. And Deion mad or worried about high school coaches. Since when is Deion mad about getting people mad at him? When is that a thing? That's not the Deion that I know. That's not the same guy that I know. And I think, like, and the idea that, well, you can't go to all of them. I tweeted this after the fact, because when I tweeted out those quotes from the story, I had multiple assistant coaches text me, like, almost immediately, being like, is this dude serious? Like, come on. And so, like, yes, that's part of it. But then the flip side of that, you know, is Kirby Smart won the national championship in 2020. The years get messed up because the games happen in the next year. It would have been 2022, correct?
No, 21 and 22. Matter. They won the title.
It doesn't matter. Season. It was the first one that he won. His staff, I think they won it on Monday night. And then the next week, when the contact period opened, they made a concerted effort for them and their whole staff to go to 100 high schools in one day. Kirby won a national championship a few days early. You don't think that it's a big deal when he comes in or he doesn't. Kirby Smart doesn't probably have to do all that stuff either, but he does because he wants to maximize the potential of his program. And if you believe that by not recruiting off campus, you are maximizing the potential of your program, especially when you have a celebrity coach like Deion Sanders, who people want to be around, who people are drawn to, and that if you went into a home, especially like a home with black people that are in their 40s and remember primetime Deion, you're not maximizing the potential of your program. You can say we've got these recruiting wins and I don't need to do it. Maybe you don't need to do it, but it's worth something. And they don't see the value in that. And that's their choice. Yeah, and I think you're going to pay the price on the field.
Real quick, I'll just say, to your point, of all these schools, if like Deion went all out in recruiting for 2 or 3 years, made visits, built great classes, they could emerge as the best team in this league. But he's not doing that, and they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kirby Smart is a subscriber to ABC, Always Be Cruton. And yeah. I think the foundation of a championship team, a team that wins in college football, is still recruiting. Like, the portal is a really good supplement, but I like to compare it to the NFL, whereas you have the draft and free agency. To me, in college, recruiting is your draft and transfer portal is your free agency, and you can supplement a team with free agency, aka the portal, but you build the foundation of that team with recruiting and retention and development. Mm-hmm. And he's not doing it. And so as we sit here talk about these tiers, Colorado, to me, honestly, belongs in tier three, because not only are they not doing the recruiting part of it from a foundational standpoint, but they just do not have a lot of great success in recent years. In the last 10 years, their winning percentage is second worst of these 16 teams, above only Kansas. So this is a program that has already struggled. I do think they're going to be better this year. They may go to the postseason, but I think Mitch is right. If Deion were to put full bore into the way he recruits, yeah, I do think the ceiling on this program could be really high when you consider the location that they are.
Boulder's awesome. And it's like, and not even that, like, with Deion Sanders as your head coach, I would say that him, Kirby, I'm trying to think of active coaches, where geography matters less. How many coaches does geography matter less than Kirby and Deion right now? Like, maybe Ryan Day? Maybe? But that's more Ohio State than Ryan Day. Like, it's pretty much purely Deion. Like, Georgia's sort of a... It's mostly Kirby, because Georgia's been around a while, and geography has mattered. But Deion, if Deion's calling you, you're picking up the phone. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if Deion's showing up at your high school, like, you're going to sit down with him as long as you want to. And they're not taking advantage of some of these natural advantages that you have when you have a head coach, like, at a school like Colorado, where there is a bit of a higher ceiling that we've seen. And you're just not, you're not banging up against the ceiling of your program with Deion Sanders at the helm if you're not willing to be serious about recruiting.
Agree, and that 100%.
That would be frustrating for me if I'm a Colorado fan.
No doubt. Let's look through the rest of these Tier 2 teams. Baylor, I had Baylor in there. I thought about putting them in Tier 1 because they have won 3 conference championships in the last 11 years. But I am a little concerned about the slide right now under Dave Aranda. Trajectory is not good. They went 6-7 in 22, went 3-9 in 23.
And you're smashing the new coordinators button, which sometimes works. For like sometimes it's the last resort. Yeah.
He's done it a few times, so that one's concerning. Kansas is on a way up right now. This is a doormat program that Lance Leipold has revived. Won 9 wins last year. But we do remember in 2007,
BCS Bowl winner.
They went to a BCS Bowl. They actually reached number 2 in the AP poll that year. So that they're an interesting one. Arizona with new coach Brent Brennan. This is a team, again, that was kind of down in the dumps, but they're on the way up. They were able to keep Noah Fifita at quarterback, which amazing. I wonder if there's a window there. BYU with Kalani Sitake. They had a little bit of a down year last year, first year of the Big 12, but they've been an interesting team the last few years. And Cincinnati, who, of course, of these teams has played in a playoff, but tough first year for Scott Satterfield. Mitch, which of these other Tier 2 teams do you feel strongest about being contenders in this conference?
I want to open by saying Kansas and Baylor fit, and this is not like an original thought, but Kansas and Cincinnati and Baylor fit my criteria as like they're a program, not a coach. They've had success under multiple staffs. Like Cincinnati was in a different league, different era, but even Big East, they had staff turnover, and they were always good. That's the example. Mm-hmm. Like back when I was at Athlon Sports, I'd go to these radio interviews and stuff, people talking, like that was my example always. Cincinnati, they're good under multiple coaches. Baylor, for all of the valleys they've had, they've been very, very good under 3 different coaches, and that's hard to do. I'll counter that with a program like Virginia Tech. That's basically only been good under 1 program. I love that Virginia Tech program, but like, can another coach get it done there? So I think that's what those 2 programs have going for them. It's tough because we're such a prisoner of the moment. Like if we did this a year and a half ago, we'd be like Baylor and TCU, but like, it's just hard to like, so I think Baylor
and Cincinnati. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Baylor, let's say Dave Aranda struggles again this year and they bring another coach in, commitment to winning, stadium, all that. Like I believe in Baylor football because I've seen it done under multiple people. So I'll say that I'm a huge Lance Leipold fan. I don't know if there's a ceiling there because of the recruiting, but maybe not. Maybe he's one of those coaches that it really doesn't matter. So I would probably say this group, Baylor, but there's a program that we haven't gotten to yet that's one of the alma maters of the 3 people in this group that I'm very high on because I absolutely love the head coach, but we'll get to them in a minute.
The question of like what is Kansas's ceiling is a very interesting question because we spent so much time. You know, you usher out Mark Mangino, you bring in Turner Gill, who digs your hole a little bit. Charlie Weiss puts you in a deeper hole. And then the Les Miles thing, I mean, a debacle. That's one of the 5 or 10 worst hires, I mean, in college football in the last decade, probably. So Lance Leipold gets him out of there in a hurry, but like the hole was so deep that like, you know, now you're building, you're on top of that, but like how high can you go? I don't really know. And we've seen Baylor put some really, really great teams together. And I think you mentioned it, 3 Big 12 titles with 3 different head coaches in a decade is really hard to do. That's crazy. So shout out to Mac Rhodes there. So that's, you know, quite a time. But I like that tier. I think that I would probably put one of the schools that I'm sure we will get to in that tier two. But let's move on.
Yeah. Before we move on to tier three, a couple quick notes. Kansas, lowest recruiting ranking of the last 10 years of all these programs, 69.8 average ranking. But Linus Leipold just signed a class that ranked 45th nationally in this 2024 cycle. So maybe a sign of things to come. BYU is also one of these teams that has won a national championship, but it was in 1984. So interesting.
One of the weirdest national championships in college sports history, which is, we don't need to go into it. But
LaVelle Edwards getting after it.
Yeah.
So there's some intrigue here in this group. I agree with you guys on Baylor. I think Baylor's the one from an infrastructure standpoint, I think has the most stability. I think leadership, they have really good stability at president AD. They just got to get the coach right. But like you said, they won under three different head coaches in the last 11 years. So I think
I'd like to know how many schools have ever done that. Three conference titles with three different head coaches in a decade.
Circumstances, because you're winning conference titles, but not losing coaches. You know,
I'm trying to think, like, you lost zero of those coaches because they weren't winning on the field. But like,
I'd say it's never happened.
It might not have ever happened.
I'm just trying to think.
That's a really good question.
Very quickly going through programs, because it's hard. A lot of programs don't win three titles.
Yeah. Maybe we should examine this.
Well, to be clear, two of those were run under Briles. They played for one under Rule, but did not win one under Rule.
I thought he won one under Rule.
They won three in the last 11, but two of them were back to back 2013 and 2014 under Briles. So, but they did play for one under Rule in 2019, his last year there. It was still a pretty impressive feat for Baylor. Let's look at the tier three teams that we have in here: Arizona State, West Virginia, UCF, Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Houston. I will start with a couple that jump out at me. Texas Tech, number one, because this is a team that has historically not been a contender in the Big 12. Of all these teams historically in the Big 12, they have, I believe it was the fewest poll appearances in the last 10 years. They've only been in the AP poll for 2 weeks in the last 10 years, none in the last 5 years. But this is a program that just signed the highest rated class in the Big 12. They signed a top two, top three class in the Big 12 the year before. Trajectory seems to be going up. David, I know you were very high on Texas
Tech. Yeah, Max, I went back and listened to our Big 12 preview. They did win the Big 12 this year, didn't they? After we recorded our preview, I didn't watch any more Texas Tech games. But do you know where they're storing the Big 12 title trophy from last season? Is that going...
Yeah,
in front of the facility.
I think it's in Austin, about a 6 hour south, 5 hour south of Lubbock in Austin, with the Longhorns. But they do have really good donor support. NIL structure is pretty good there. I think that's a team that could be in the mix. Mitch, I'm going to go to you. The team I know you're really high on. The team, my alma mater, Houston. Their ceiling. They are new to the Big 12. Willie Fritz just became the head coach there, but really surprising to me, second lowest recruiting average in the last 10 years among Big 12 schools, 67.4. I mean, obviously outside of a power conference for that and almost that entire existence, so that's hard. But that's the most talent-rich area in the country. So I'm curious, when in our recruiting ranking expectation, you, I believe, Mitch, had Houston the highest. So I'm curious what you think of the Cougars' potential in the Big 12 long term.
Well, I'm just a big Willie Fritz fan, have been for years. I remember when Georgia Southern hired him, and I used to rank new hires that everyone does. And I was like, wow, this guy he wins everywhere, and the old winners win. And in a league like this, where we keep saying all these programs are basically in a very similar spot in the food chain, what are you going to do? You're going to look at who's the coach. That's why we like Kansas now. Well, that's why we didn't like Kansas before, because they got a great coach. So I think Willie Fritz, you combine what he did at Tulane, historically bad program, got them very, very good. He's going to, in the Houston Confidential that, you know, you did, like making very favorable impressions in this, which you'd expect from a new coach. You'd be alarmed if a new coach wasn't making favorable impressions. But I think he's going to recruit that area very well and just give him a roster that's comparable to the other teams in the league. And I think he's going to win. So I could not be more high in Houston football. I was not a huge Dana Holgerson guy. I just did not think there was any sustained success there. I'm buying all the Willie Fritz stock, as you saw by my, you know, rankings.
Well, for the record, I think we all, we were the three people that had Houston the highest. You had them the highest, Mitch. I had them 37. Sam, you had them 36. I want to see this program unlocked. It's not just that they were outside of the Power Five. They had a head coach. I think Dana Holgorsen is a good football coach, not a guy known as a maniacal recruiter. And I think if you get a coach in there, I mean, I think I was campaigning for Kansas to hire Willie Fritz like 10 years ago. Like, I've been a big Willie Fritz guy. I've been on that Fritz train. And he, you know, can be a coach that can sort of help unlock some of these things in Houston. You know, we saw it with Tom Herman for a brief window. Like, he had it going there. I mean, you're getting 5 stars mm-hmm. to stay home. And I think everyone knows the potential of that program. And if they start winning, you know, rallying that community in the early days of Dion, when before people sort of realized he was not going to be willing to put in the recruiting work, I did have multiple people. I had an agent tell me this. I had a couple coaches tell me this, that the one place that they were scared of Dion getting a hold of would be if he went to Houston.
Yeah,
because it's not just like Dion's part of it, but because people know in Houston, if you get it rolling, mm-hmm. buddy, it is time. So I would put Houston in tier two here because I think their ceiling, other than TCU, they might have the highest ceiling. I mean, we've seen it, right? I would have liked to have seen that Tom Herman Houston team maybe get a shot in a 12-team playoff because they were really tough on the lines. You know, shout out to Greg Ward. That was a really fun team and a really interesting team that they beat Oklahoma, right? In the year
yes,
after.
Yes, the 2016, they kicked off the season really beating up beat Oklahoma.
Yeah.
It was stark how physical they were compared to Oklahoma on the line of scrimmage that day.
And that, I think, of all of the, like, G5 darlings in the BCS era, in the playoff era, all of that stuff, I think that Houston team might have been the best on the lines of scrimmage ever. And you can only build that at a place where you can
get... What year? I'm sorry. I got distracted. Not to be an Ari here. I was got distracted.
2015-16.
15 was...
So I was going to tell you guys, like, I went, you know, I think you guys know I was sideline reporter for Vanderbilt for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And 2015, it was Derek Mason's first season, went to Houston, and during one of their really good teams, I think it was Kyle Shermer's first start as a true freshman. So you're going with a freshman quarterback. But, like, I'm not a scout evaluator, but standing on the sidelines, you really get to see the physicality of teams. Yeah. And they were impressive. And Andy Ludwig, the offensive coordinator, I do my coordinator interviews before, like, the Thursday before for the pregame show. And I asked him about, and he's like, this is an SEC roster. Like, this is an SEC team. Like, they're no different than the teams we're going to be facing next week, the week after that. And they manhandled a bad Vanderbilt team. It was like 30-0. But I could not have been more impressed by their, like, just, it wasn't just the skill. It was the physicality in the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. This is a program, and not to go too far back, but they were only in Southwest Conference 20 years, but I think they won 4 conference championships at that time. Of course, they were
all
banished.
Legal, right?
Yeah.
But nothing.
Southwest Conference. Come on now.
Everybody in the Southwest Conference except Rice was doing it. So, I mean, at that point, we were on an even playing field to some degree, you know? I guess unless
you're cheating, you ain't trying.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying. I mean, SMU outclassed them all with their donors. So, but this is a program that when they have been in a power conference, which was only for a short amount of time, they have shown some potential to succeed. So I am curious. I agree with you on the Fritz hire. I think Fritz is going to raise the floor back on this program and get it organized in a way that I think could speak to its long-term potential. But Iowa State is a program that...
great program. We haven't mentioned them yet. That's just...
Yeah, ceiling, I think, is... Ceiling, I feel like, is lower on this one. But this is one where Matt Campbell has raised the floor. This feels like a win on the margins program. We talked about Texas Tech. UCF is another one I'm super intrigued by because they have a coach in Gus Malzahn who's won in the SEC, who has played for a national championship, and
recruiting a lot
just,
better. Look at their classes. They're getting top 100 guys. Yeah.
2024 class ranked 35. That is the third highest in the Big 12 behind Texas and TCU in this cycle. And they're in the state of Florida. So I think UCF's going to be a factor. Arizona State, I want to get Ubbin's thoughts on them in just a second because he mentioned what he thought the ceiling was on them. West Virginia is one I want to mention. Neil Brown, of course, coaches way off the hot seat. But the one thing that stood out to me about West Virginia is that I felt like they were a really solid program in the Big East. I don't want to bring up 2007 and the game against Pitt because I know that's a really tortured memory for Mountaineer
edit
fans,
this part of the pod out, Cam. We don't need to lose all of this.
but since 2000, West Virginia has spent 142 weeks in the AP top 25, which is fourth most among the 16 teams of the Big 12. But they have not been ranked in the top 25 at any point in the last 5 years. So basically, have not been ranked at all.
Yeah, a program with great history.
That's shocking.
I mean,
that's
Major Harris. I mean, we're going way back. But when I was a kid growing up in New Jersey, like West Virginia was a thing. Like Major Harris, was in 1989. In fact, I went to just a public high school in New Jersey, and West Virginia played for the national championship my senior year. The next year, out of like 100 kids in my class, like 11 went to West Virginia. It was just the cool thing to do because they were good at football.
West Virginia is in a weird spot because I think I remember writing this when they moved over to the Big 12 because you could kind of see it. Like, I remember tracking West Virginia the last couple years in the Big East, and I was like, they're playing tin cans like 6 weeks out of the year. And I was like, there's not a lot of tin cans in the Big 12. And I think West Virginia was like patient zero for, if you look at them pre-Big 12, as they moved into a more substantive conference, that as we've seen all these conferences coalesce into like gigantic leagues and higher leagues, I think they are patient zero for having to reset expectations. That like going 8-4 is probably not your ceiling, but like you probably might need to define that as like a pretty good year now. Like, I'm not saying West Virginia can't have an 11-1 season or a 10-2 season. Like, that's definitely something that can happen. But, like, that's not going to be the norm anymore. And that was the norm in the Big East for a lot of years. You know, and part of that's having really good coaches like Rich Rod and, Dana for a bit. In the peak era, late in the Big East, going into the Big 12. So, but you're just playing better competition all the time. Like, there's not a lot of, like, you know, Syracuse, you know, UConn hanging around the Big East, or in the Big 12. You know, they're just not, despite Brett Yormark's best efforts.
Yeah.
So, like, that just is a thing. And I think you're going to see a lot of programs have to adjust to this. Like, what is success in the, you know, whatever, how many teams is the Big 10 going to have now? 18? 16? Whatever. What is success there? A lot of programs that are used to being like, when they win 9 or 10 games, buddy, you better might think about giving your coach an extension winning 9 or 10 games. And I think that there's a lot of programs that are going to have to get used to that. And I think, you know, West Virginia was one of the first ones, and they're in a weird spot program-wise where you have to adjust your expectations. So an interesting program, but I think just there's not a lot of institutional advantages for them. I think one of the things that they have, I compare West Virginia to Arkansas a lot, and that there's not a lot of programs that can unite an entire state. You know, Marshall's in the league, but like, they're not West Virginia. And so I think you have that. And that is one thing that can be nice, you know, especially when you talk about state pride and building up your NIL war chest and all these things, that can be a really big asset. But I think it's tough for them. They don't have, to me, the upside of, you know, like a Houston, like a TCU, that have some advantages that I think are geography-based.
Mitch, real quick, out of this group, Arizona State, West Virginia, UCF, Iowa State, who do you feel best about?
I'm weighing Arizona State or UCF. UCF's kind of a mini version of Houston, not mini because it's a huge school, but they don't have the institutional history of Houston. Doesn't mean they can't get it done.
Youngest program of the 16, yeah.
Yeah, and but they quickly built up a fan base there. There's enough to go around in Florida for them to get, you know, the quote-unquote leftovers, and maybe they'll start. You know, if let's say Florida struggles continue, they might win some recruiting battles there. I'm been watching college football so long and just can't believe that Arizona State hasn't been better. They've had their moments in the sun, but at some point, sleeping giants are dead giants. They're not sleeping giants. And Kenny Dillingham, for all his talk, love what he says, they're still not recruiting at a very high level. And I know he just got there, and they fought last year through a bad year. The quarterback injuries and stuff like that, they battled. So I think he's the right guy there. So I am going to say UCF slightly over Arizona State in that group.
Mm-hmm. David, what's your Arizona State take in about 60 seconds?
Like, Kenny Dillingham has leaned in on like hashtag activate the valley, and like
only Ari's allowed to say that, by the way.
Their potential there is great, but like literally no one has ever tapped that potential. Like if you listen to Kenny make the sales pitch of like, hey, you can come here and stay here for 50 years, like build a business, do all these things. I think that's a real thing. But like they're just like, I think having transplants is part of it. That people, it's hard to get people excited for Arizona State football, and I don't really know exactly why that is, and it's really, really difficult because he's done like everything right. Built his staff, like you got the really young recruiters, these up and comers, really good young coaches. You got guys that you trust. You got good X's and O's guys. You went and got Brian Ward from Washington State, a guy who loved, you know, you hated coaching against, and has come in, and it just, man, you got to get dudes. You got to get dudes, and I think you can get some guys to stay home, but I, you know, if he can't get it, I don't know how you get it going at Arizona State, but certainly if somebody can get it rolling, that's a sustainable thing.
Yeah. The good rundown of all these programs. Let's wrap it up by talking about the future. I'll just rapid fire questions to you guys. Mitch, I'll start with you. Do you think a Big 12 program will make a 12 team semifinal or championship game in the next 5 years?
5 years, I'll say semifinal. I don't think they'll make a championship game. I know that's not, but I'm with David. We opened the show. I don't think they're going to win the national championship. I think there's just too many good teams you have to beat. But I'll say yes, they'll make a semifinal.
Semifinal, yes. Championship game, no.
What about 10 years?
Same answer.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. I think the Big 12 will make a championship game within the next 10 years. Within the next 5 will be interesting. I do agree on the semifinal. The championship game, I do think within 10 years, I think it'll, because I do think at some point, like you, David alluded to, I think within that 10-year span, I think we're going to get some change to the structure of the sport in terms of like player movement and contracts and employees.
Yeah, we don't know what the hell's going to be happening in 8 years. Yeah.
So maybe
we don't know what's
going to
be happening in 2 years.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe they can retain some of this talent that may be poached by bigger power programs in the past. How about a 14-team playoff with two hypothetical auto bids? If we do this 3-3-2-2-1-1, whatever the heck format that the SEC and Big Ten were trying to throw out.
That's a soccer formation.
I hope, by the way, I hope we don't do that format. But if we do that format and the Big 12 has two auto bids, do you think that improves their chances of winning a national championship?
I think the more time goes by, that gulf between the haves and have nots is only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So like, in theory, when you say, what about 10 years instead of 5, you know, the implication there is like more bites at the apple, but I think it's only going to get harder. If you don't do it in the next 5 years, like how much more money are the Big Ten, the SEC going to be making in 2035 than they will be in 2030? Because I think it's going to be a lot more annually, and then that compounds, and then that is going to mean more money on your roster, I think. And that is going to be a problem for these smaller schools that, even if you have some geographical advantages, if you lack the financial advantages, that's going to be hard to crack these fields.
Mitch, if the ACC falls apart and we are essentially left with the Big Ten, the SEC, and the Big 12, what do you think that means for the Big 12's chances in this conversation?
We have 3 hours. I don't know. I mean, it depends. You know, does Florida State and Clemson and North Carolina join a reformed Big 12 that's now has this ability to make all this money? So I'm going to defer to David on that one. I don't know.
Well, if we're talking programs with potential, you know, a Big 12 with Miami as a member is not like the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, just, but how big can they, once they're at 16 now, like, are they going to bring six more teams in and get to 22? Then what's the point of having a conference?
Mitch, you're being the Brett Yormark, you never know.
Yeah, Mitch, all I'm hearing is somebody who grossly underestimates the stupidity of the college sports enterprise at the current moment.
I have too much faith in mankind.
You need to lose some of that faith. Again, I think it's the point that is like a trump card over and over again. Never. In case you ever doubt or think that college sports makes sense, never, ever, ever forget that the Atlantic Coast Conference currently has multiple members whose campuses are located on the coast of the Pacific Ocean.
Right. That's Kyle.
Good point.
Kyle Smith just hired to coach an ACC team at Stanford just while we've been doing our podcast. So there you go.
Last one for you. I'm going to rapid fire this one. If there is one team that does emerge from this pack to win a national championship and you can only pick one that you think is going to do it, which is that team? Mitch, I'll start with you.
So who's one team from the Big 12, if I have gun to my head.
If I just tell you one's going to do it, one of them is going to do it, who is that team in your opinion?
I'm probably going to like contradict. I said something earlier in the podcast. I know this is not
good. TCU or Houston?
Yeah, this is not good podcasting. I'm going to go Houston.
Houston.
TCU okay, or what Houston?
Do you say? TCU. Give me one. You got to pick one, yeah. Dave. You can't hedge.
I'm gonna go Houston.
Wow, that's interesting. You have more faith in my alma mater than I do. Not that I don't, but I don't.
Talent, I'm actually, baby, talent. I think in the NIL era, especially maybe the portal era, Houston has enough talent, and you can keep enough guys home that I think you could scramble together a roster that is physical enough on the lines and good enough, and you get one transcendent quarterback. It's not the craziest thing ever.
That's interesting. I would pick between TCU and Utah, and honestly, I'm going to go Utah because as long as Kyle Whittingham is there, as long as they recruit at the level they do, as long as they play with the physicality they do, they did run into a ceiling in the Pac-12 that I don't think they're going to have to run into in the Big 12. And so in the near future, I do think their chances are really good. So I kind of like the Utes' chances.
I think they've got the highest floor. I'm not sold on the Utah ceiling.
Well, now that they're in a conference with Texas schools and they can recruit Texas a little bit more, I think
that's why I would go Houston over Utah, because earlier I said like Houston. If we're picking most conference wins over the next 5 years, I'd probably go Utah, mm-hmm. but I think Houston has a higher ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. A lot of Kugel love on the podcast. Didn't expect that today. Well, Mitch, David, thank you for joining me today, and thank you all for listening to this edition of the Intel Saturday podcast. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the Until Saturday feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We really appreciate all of you who do take the time to listen. If you want to be part of the show, call us, leave us a voicemail on the Until Saturday phone line at 316-462-9852 for our future mailbag episodes. Subscribe to the Until Saturday newsletter so you can get our college football news coming straight to your inbox. If you subscribe to the newsletter soon, you can vote in our college football stadium bracket challenge for the best stadium in college football. Jana Bardal made a bracket of 32 stadiums. The Elite Eight was unveiled on Tuesday. There's still time to participate and vote for the final four before the end of this week. So be sure to check the link in the show's description to subscribe to the newsletter and take part in that vote. Thank you so much for joining us today. Ari will be back on Friday. For Mitch, Dave, I'm Sam. This was Until Saturday.
And bring back the turnover challenge. Maybe bring it to the Big Four.